Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
There is like a forsaken feeling to this thing where I don't know. I don't know why anybody wants to write it, read it, follow it.
Talk about it.
I'm being honest.
I am being honest too. I respect that you're a Sox fan. I respect that there are Sox fans out there. We are 1-9 streak away from considering the White Sox hockey in this sports talk radio parlance.
As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
Why would you talk about hockey? Don't talk about hockey. Talk too much hockey. No.
Now, Laz, I want to talk about this Ranger offense.
You should do that.
Harder to justify talking, covering, looking at the White Sox.
Well, and we've got a texter saying you're already talking too much about them. This is more of a goodbye, isn't it?
Goodbye, old friend. May the force be with you.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great show.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's a glorious Tuesday. We're midway through April, Mr. David, and goodness gracious, inching ever closer to the NFL draft. It's only 9 days away.
Morning, Mo. Yes, happy Tuesday. Good to be back in the studio. Good to be back at work. And a lot happened on Monday. Looking forward to the draft. But speaking of drafts, wow, what a sky that lit up last night.
Oh, look at you. Look at you. You know what I like? And I know this is just a meatball take. But I like that the sky gave us name recognition. I know that it's about getting the best players. I know they needed size. And Camila Cardosa, who is the player of the Final Four, is 6'7" and was on an undefeated team. Mm-hmm. And that seems like a good get. Angel Reese, certainly someone you're familiar with, you know about. She was an NCAA champion, beat Caitlin Clark a year ago, and was, I believe, the premier player of that Final Four. So I understand that, you know, it's a lunkhead idea that they got people I've heard of, but I did watch those girls play.
Yeah, I don't think it's a meatball idea at all.
And I like it.
I think it's maximizing a marketing opportunity. It's making your basketball organization better. It's capitalizing on the unprecedented popularity of the women's sport at this time.
Right.
These are two young ladies who are great players, but also were on the biggest stage that the women's college basketball has ever been on.
Yes.
And so it's a quick transition. It wasn't that long ago, 10 days ago, it's the women's Final Four, and we're watching and we're learning and we're drawn to the set because of Caitlin Clark. But you're also seeing Angel Reese and Cardoza. And I think when you look at what they're capable of doing, then you're excited. And maybe this is the sky. Yeah. It's like, is it best available or biggest need? Both.
Yeah. They needed size and they got 6'7", 6'3".
I wasn't even talking about the basketball.
But I'm talking about the basketball.
The basketball, yeah. Best available and biggest need, but also from an organizational standpoint, from a relevance standpoint.
Right.
They got two players that will make you curious enough to tune in, to go, to watch and pay attention. We were kidding about the White Sox in the Open coming in. I'd rather talk about the sky right now because of what the possibility.
Whoa, my friend. You are ignoring that there's a new Nasty in town.
Okay, there is. We'll get the Nick Nastrini. Is that his nickname now? The new Nasty?
I saw that, you know, of course, I've watched way too much of that game. I saw that his family was in a booth and they kept holding up a sign that said Nasty.
They did.
He's not Wes Nasty.
No, he's not.
He's Nasty.
He had a nice
Nasty Nick
debut. The Sox lose again. But my point being that
I know
there's going to be more sky conversation. There's going to be more sky interest. A little buzz, I think, that now exists because of the draft last night. The sky did not get Caitlin Clark, but they might have won the draft.
The only other element of the White Sox that bears mentioning, and it does bear mentioning, they were shut out for the fifth time in, what is it, 16 games?
Yeah.
That is an extraordinary run of futility.
It is.
And they did lose the game 2-0. And the only reason that is significant is because it's yet another shutout. They were shut out 13 times total a year ago when they lost 101 games. They've already been shut out five times.
They've been shut out
about a tenth of the way through the season.
It's a sixth time in in 16 games. Six shutouts in 16 games.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, I lost one.
I mean, it's easy to lose track of the futility as it continues to mount. But this is not even something you look at and you see any glimmers of hope. This is the worst offensive lineup in Sox history.
Oh, yeah.
And in recent major league memory. I don't know of another team. This is, as Bruce said, and he tabbed it, and I know he may have gotten some grief. Bruce is a very fair-minded guy, but this is an expansion team.
Oh, that's being polite.
That's not kicking the Sox while they're down. That's acknowledging reality.
There have been better expansion teams than this.
Expansion teams, go out and you can like raid other teams of players they don't want any longer. At least they're veterans and give you representative at-bats. I'm not sure what the Sox have up there, but like I said, facetiously last week, it started to become more true. In a series against the Iowa Cubs and the Chicago White Sox, I'm not sure who I would take, but my money might be on the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Cubs, the major league team, and that's something worthy of talking about. They were fantastic, and they won again last night, and they got another good pitching performance from Ben Brown. David, you made the call, I believe, last week before we got out of here. You wanted to know where the hell Keegan Thompson was.
Yes.
Well, he was out there for two innings last night, and he was excellent. And they also got another home run from Michael Busch. Wow. Are there a lot of guys like Michael Busch in the minor leagues? Is it only with the Dodgers? Can we make more trades for guys like that?
It's a testament to the Cubs scouting, actually, when you look at a guy like Michael Busch blocked in L.A. and the Cubs giving up two young prospects that are doing pretty well in the bright futures. Jackson Ferris, the lefty, and then a 19-year-old outfielder who's at single A right now, Zaire Hope, I believe. And you have to give up something to get something. But Michael Busch is off to a historic start. He's got six home runs already. He's got five games in a row. That hasn't happened since last year for the Cubs.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it's really something special.
But last night,
to see how they're playing, and that was such a clutch win last night.
Ben Brown too. Perfect.
Ben Brown was fantastic. I said that first, but I don't know, like, who's the didn't Nico scores from second base in the ninth inning to tie the game, and then he gets the game-winning hit.
Yep.
I'm saying you're hard pressed to find. You know, you got a guy who's homered five straight games, only the fifth Cub ever to get that done, along with names like Hack Wilson. I don't know if anybody follows Hack Wilson, but wow, he was a stubby little man that could hit home runs like crazy. Sammy Sosa-esque, if you will. Sammy's one of them. Rhino, we know Rhino, and Christopher Morel.
Yeah.
Those are the guys he joins on that list. So I just think you're spoiled for choice and trying to figure out who your favorite Cub is right now.
Well, Michael Busch has emerged as a consummate professional in his rookie season. That's what everyone says, his teammates, and you can see it. And I think him coming through in the clutch and now needing to do that with Seiya Suzuki going on the injured list.
That was bad news.
Yeah, the oblique is not something you want to ever have, especially he had similar injury last year on a different side, but Michael Busch steps forward, moves up in the batting order, and last night you wonder how they won that game. Nico Hoerner hustles from second base, never stopped coming around third. Willie Harris let him go, pointed to the plate, and Nico Hoerner scores a run, and then he knocks in the winner in the 11th. This is a team now won three in a row, started to worry when they lost three out of four. Good baseball team, though.
Yes, no question about that. So that's really good to see. Had a Drew Smyly moment, which was a little bad, but for the most part, you got to feel great about everything that happened for the Cubs. It was weird that Christopher Morel came out of that game, but I guess his bat hasn't been that good, right? So you go with a defensive replacement, even though I thought his defense has improved. But nonetheless,
he had a good defensive weekend. He did. He had a decent road trip out. He was good in Seattle. And, you know, Craig Council is going to push the buttons. So far, yeah, he definitely has handled things in a way that makes you – there's a method behind his madness, but it isn't – there's a new manager in town. That's pretty obvious. And I think when you look at all the moves that he's made, and it makes you feel good if you're a Cub fan about the way this pitching staff is being handled. And – it makes you feel better when you see a guy like Keegan Thompson come up, and since he's been brought up, lights out.
Yeah, it's fascinating to think about it. It really is. When you're winning these games in the middle of the night on the road, those are huge wins. To win a series as they did, you know, they came close to getting the Padres series. They got the Seattle series, and now here they are winning the opener of the Arizona series. These are the kind of things that not everybody is able to stay up and monitor and care about. But when you see the entirety of it, that's how you have a winning season. That's how you do your damage. And to do so while you're battling injuries and different pitching issues that are ongoing. And Jameson Taillon apparently very close to coming back.
So that's why tonight's a big night. Kyle Hendricks on the mound out in Arizona. Yep. Pre-game right here on the Score, 8:05. Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer on the call. First pitch, 8:40 right here in Chicago. And you can listen to it on your free Odyssey app. But I think when you look at Kyle Hendricks being the guy, they now need him to start this turnaround. You now have guys in the last two nights.
Yep.
Javier Assad and Ben Brown, I don't think they're going anywhere.
Well,
I don't think they should.
I agree with that. But what's interesting is the way you're putting it is you're acting like the Cubs need him. He needs to turn it around for the reasons you're stating. Didn't they pick up who? Julio Teheran. They picked him up
minor league deal.
Nonetheless, you know, professional pitcher, cut by the Mets. And a guy that you only would, you know, obviously, Council had him last year for a stretch in Milwaukee, and there's a familiarity there. I just think that when you see a team make a move like that, then they're aware that there are other issues ongoing with whomever. So I think the professor needs to sit up and take notice to all of this.
I think it's probably a bigger start for Kyle Hendricks than it is for the Cubs.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think that the Cubs need Kyle Hendricks near the end of the season than the beginning. And if he can continue, if he can find a way to recapture what's missing so far, it'd be good for both sides. And the Cubs would benefit from his experience down the stretch.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that at all. But there's a lot going on with the Cubs, as you say, you know. The Suzuki injury is a rough one just because he was playing so well. Mm-hmm. And then you also worry because he had a similar injury a year ago that cost him 6 weeks.
And you didn't see it coming. I was surprised by the news. It was not the kind of news you want to hear.
Never.
And it was a little bit of a relief to say that it's not as much serious as last year. I don't know if that's wishful thinking or an accurate diagnosis, but he has been somebody that – has been their best hitter, I think, since the season began. And now they move everybody up in the lineup a little bit, and it'll be an opportunity for Mike Tauchman to get some more playing time. Then you lose Garrett Cooper in the DH role. They've got some options, but I'm not sure about the batting order now. You like Suzuki where he was, and now you got to move Dansby Swanson there and keep everybody else in their spot.
I know it's right after the Masters, but there is a rumor out there apparently that started at the Masters, was reported by City AM, which honestly I didn't know this. I thought the FT was London's most read financial paper, but now I learn it's City AM, and they are reporting that Rory McIlroy could be close to joining LIV Golf for, wait for it, $850 million plus an ownership stake in the league. I mean, if they're giving you that, how do you resist? But Rory, you know, I hate LIV Golf. That is just, that's a shocker to read that news. And again, it hasn't been confirmed, although I believe Yahoo's reported it's making the rounds now. It's getting a lot of legs.
Yeah.
So where there's smoke, you got to wonder.
You do wonder.
But you wonder about the future of the PGA.
Well, Holy God, you wonder about that. This is money that's very difficult to relate to. And it's money that is basically, it's almost as if they're going to players like Rory and saying, okay, what is the price of your soul?
Yeah.
Because we're going to buy it. And you're gonna we're going to make you an offer you cannot refuse. And nobody, I think, within good reason, I don't know how you could criticize somebody for taking nearly $1 billion to play golf.
It'd be hard. Yeah, I mean, the problem is he said all these things.
I know. But that's why, right now, life has changed. I mean, it's very hard. Yeah. I'm speaking only for me, not for this show, certainly not for Dustin, I know. But, like, this is what makes me sick of watching golf.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so tired of this, you know, this we are going to act outraged at the LIV Golf Tour until they make us an offer that is large enough for me to reason, impossible for me to say no to. And then we bring them all together for majors, and then they split up apart, and then they get together for a major, and we're going to talk about the division of the sport. And my God, is it not nauseating?
What Bryson DeChambeau finished, I believe, sixth in the Masters. Is that right, Dustin? And that's the highest finish for a LIV golfer. The LIV golfers didn't do great, and I don't know if that means they're not in enough competition, mm-hmm. they're not playing enough. I don't know what it means, frankly. If I had $850 million, I think the last thing I do would be work on my golf game, or maybe that'd be the only thing I do.
What's he doing now? Is he hurting?
I don't know.
He's working on his golf game now.
I don't know how much money he has.
I don't know how much money you need.
For the sake of argument, let's say he's got $100 million,
right,
which is a lot of money.
But it's a ton of money.
But a billion seems like a lot more.
I know. That's why I'm not going to sit here and fake outrage. It bothered me before the whole movement when everybody was selling out and going over. At this stage, it's
sports
almost
washing.
Like... Yeah, sports washing. I don't like it. We could spend the next, you know, week going having a segment a day why sports washing is bad for America and athletes and sports, but it really is not going to change anything. And frankly, I'm tired of the conversation. Now that's just me venting and showing disgust over a game that I have lost interest in, largely because of this. But I understand why it's a big story. And when he makes that move, and he's gonna make that move.
Well,
you just got that sense.
If it's that kind of money,
then yeah, I'm not going to.
Does he have a choice?
I will. Rather than rail at what's happening in golf, I'll probably shrug and continue to look away. I did not watch the Masters this weekend. I enjoyed ignoring it, and I really don't care.
Yeah, I do like the Masters. I do like the big tournaments. I thought the Tiger stuff was compelling for 2 days, and then it was awful. That Saturday at the Masters was tough to watch with Tiger Woods. Featured as much as he was.
Now, I'm interested in Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
He's trying to maintain some level of integrity. He does care about showing up at the majors, and we all want to see him recapture some glory before he walks away or limps away.
That is never happening.
But that is not happening.
He is never going to win another major. And I'm not being mean. I just mean based on form and based on, like, he put everything he had into making the cut.
Yep.
And then he had nothing left. And it was tough. It was tough to watch. And you felt bad for him. And you're right. You know, Tiger's one of the most compelling figures. But, you know, he brings a ton of eyeballs, and he takes a lot of them away from the other players mm-hmm. in the tournament.
But
it's just the reality.
But that's the reality of being a legend and being the greatest golfer ever. You want him to... You want him to have a graceful exit, and I just don't know if it's going to be anything but clumsy. And you watch over the weekend, and I see the highlights, and you read the stories, and you feel some empathy for somebody who's trying but just can't do what he's so used to doing. And the energy was exhausted after making the cut. And then it was like, okay, I'm good. I got nothing left. And you felt for him. I felt for him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I felt for him, too. It's a tough story. But anyway, so we talked about golf. How about that?
How about golf?
Don't talk golf.
How about hockey? Want to talk hockey?
I want to talk about I love talking hockey, and I want to know when those Hawks players are coming up. I'm now really interested because of the draft and everything. And, you know, frankly, the NHL playoffs are phenomenal. And you see the Rangers won the President's Cup. That's a death knell. What a mistake that was. Now you've got no chance of winning. Is that fair?
That's fair.
All right. This is what really I'm curious about. The White Sox, the Bulls, the Blackhawks are nearing a deal with Stadium as their new home. Mm-hmm. Explain this to me. So are we no longer going to be on – is Stadium going to have a cable outlet, or are we going to – I just don't think I understand what it means. The rights holder, NBC Sports Chicago, their contract expires in October, and there's a possibility that they could agree to a six-month extension, in which case they would all go to Stadium in a year.
Next April. Yeah.
But
the deal's up in October.
Does that mean NBC Sports Chicago is done?
Yes.
And then what happens?
It would
Does that outlet become Stadium?
That outlet, theoretically, the details are certainly not have not been announced or being discussed and maybe negotiated. But the way I would understand it, the way the story reads, is that, yes, NBC Sports Chicago would cease to exist. And a very much a similar product would just transition to it would be Stadium. And you change
the venue. Stadium's been around for a while.
Stadium's been around for a while. It's located at the United Center. NBC Sports Chicago, of course, is over by the Merchandise Mart in the basement of what used to be the Sun-Times building, the Holiday Inn there. And so it would transition to basically that kind of a product.
Did the Sun-Times move out of there?
Yeah.
When did they move?
I believe so. Long time ago.
Wow.
Long time ago.
Didn't even know that.
The distribution of what we be as sports fans, seeing from the old Sox, the Hawks, and the Bulls.
Yeah. Same announcer, same broadcast, right?
Well, the broadcasters are employees of the team.
Yes.
So that would not change. You know, look, full disclosure, you know I work over there part-time and have a great relationships with a lot of people behind the scenes especially, and those are the people that I really have some concerns about because those are the people that make that place go and have always made that place go. So – you know, from an on-air standpoint, I'm not sure how different the product will be. From a behind-the-scenes and employee standpoint, yeah, I mean,
there's a lot of people,
relationships, and those kinds of things. You are concerned from a human standpoint, but details need to be ironed out, and I'm not quite sure where it's going. It could end next October, it could end next April, but it does seem like it's going to end at some point.
All right. Well, we've got a lot to pick apart. We've got. The pick six next. We'll take our shots at all the stories of the day. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Are you at all concerned that Seiya Suzuki's right oblique strain that landed him on the 10-day IL could impact his MVP chances? Was Suzuki doing that well in a great start of the season? Are you concerned because Suzuki missed 6 weeks when he suffered an oblique strain last spring?
Yeah, that was a left oblique strain, so it's a different oblique strain. I don't know enough about the oblique strains, but that does not sound good, and it kind of came out of nowhere. And here's hoping that we're not comparing apples to oranges and that this, I think that was a moderate oblique strain. This one hopefully is less severe and he's back a lot quicker. He's been great. I have a buddy who went to Vegas recently and put an MVP bet on him and he was crestfallen. So I don't blame him. He's been fantastic to start the season, and he looked like he was playing as well as anybody on the team. So that's a drag. That's tough stuff. But that is also baseball, next man up mentality. You know, let's hope it's 10 days and he's back and that this is not a long-term deal. But it's weird that it's an oblique 2 years running. That's not good. That's not a great sign.
So we're going to blame Mully's buddy for this injury, putting the curse on Seiya by going out to Las Vegas and putting that MVP.
I thought it was a heady move.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
He got it at 61 and dropped to 50.
If Michael Bush is considered a rookie, the heady move might have been voting for, you know, putting money down on Michael Bush.
He's a rookie.
No, he's not.
He's a rookie.
We had this guy. No, he's not a rookie. Okay, he played in the major leagues last year. He's not a rookie. Okay, he's not a rookie, David. He had at bats at the big league level. He's not a rookie.
How many?
I don't care.
I'm checking.
He's not. Shota Imanaga is not a rookie. He had a career in Japan before he came here.
He's also not
a rookie. And these are Cubs players, okay, that could win hardware. We could get into that later if you'd like, and I would like to. I defend my position. I'm stand on that hill alone if I have to. For right now, especially considering the Cubs won last night against one of the best pitchers in baseball, I'm going to, okay, hey, listen, everybody needs a day off. Seiya's going to get 10 of them. If he can come back after 10, you know, let me know when he gets another 5 days or 10 days on this thing, then I'll hit the panic button. Right now I'm going to say, okay, but does it affect his MVP? Maybe not, because he started so well. I mean, he could still be there.
He's not winning MVP. I mean, well, he might be the Cubs MVP, but.
Oh boy, here we go.
I just don't think he's.
There is a difference, David.
I know,
there is a Cubs MVP and there is a National League MVP.
Kind of gets off track. Look, he.
Twice.
What is it with these injuries? And the big ones in town have been what in football would be described as non-contact injuries.
Yeah.
Final at bat against the Mariners. Seiya feels something running to first base. And all of a sudden, now we have news that it is an oblique on the right side after last year's left side. Shelved him for 6 weeks. Cubs can't afford to lose him for 6 weeks. I know Michael Bush is stepping up. I know Alex Canario is here to sit on the bench some more. Every notice, whenever he comes up, all he does is sit. It's like, is he going to play? Can the young man bat? Give him a bat. Put him in the lineup. Let's see what he's got, because the Cubs need to do something without Seiya for the next, I think it might be more than 10 days. How often do you see an oblique strain get better in 10 days? That's just a good start to what we might look at as a couple weeks. Cubs have had some injury issues, and they have the quality depth to overcome them. But Steele, Tyone, Merriweather, now Seiya Suzuki, ouch, this one hurts. But they do have depth. They do have Tauchman. They do have Cooper. They do have Canario. Let's see Craig Counsell do more with less, the way that he is paid to do.
Wow, that's a great question.
There's a fly ball deep right center. This ball's back toward the wall. He's done it again. Michael Bush has tied a Cubs record by homering in his fifth consecutive game. Way out near the 413 sign in deep right center. It took one bounce and I believe landed in that swimming pool that they have out beyond the barrier in right center. What a story this is turning out to be.
That's how it sounded last night on 670 The Score. The Hall of Famer Pat Hughes with the call. Is Michael Bush's power surge sustainable? He's joined a group of Cubs, including Ryne Sandberg, Hack Wilson, Christopher Morel, Sammy Sosa, to hit home runs in five straight games.
Quite a splash indeed, Pat Hughes. Thank you very much for that. Great highlight. Great start. Rookie Michael Bush has done everything that you hoped he could do and exceeded expectations already. I wonder how the league will adjust to him. I wonder how he'll adjust to the adjustments. And that's always a concern when you have a rookie playing a key position and you have a rookie in the lineup off to some early success, because this rookie is really hammering pitching. And thank goodness for the Cubs, because he looks like a natural. He looks like a guy that has more than the 27 games experience with the Dodgers he came to Chicago with. Not enough to qualify him as a rookie in 2023. So thank goodness for the Cubs. This rookie is making history.
Wonder what the skipper thinks of that rookie rule while we're overemphasizing things that people dislike on this show. Is it sustainable? Why not? Are they gonna start walking the guy? Is he getting protection behind him? Listen, keep throwing him. So he has been awfully good, really making Jed and Carter look awfully smart at this moment. Because I'll tell you what, without Michael Bush, this team that has 10 wins right now, you know, maybe 500 without Michael Bush. Maybe. Might be below 500. He has provided all of the offense. That they are living, the Cubs right now are living and dying with the long ball. And it's a pretty prestigious group in Cubs lore that he has joined.
He has been remarkably consistent in his at-bats. He's been very consistent. He looks good in his at-bats, and he was the minor league player of the year for L.A. a year ago, sporadic trips to the big leagues, but not, I don't think, enough to count as a rookie. So he is a 26-year-old rookie this year and a guy that has had a ton of success already in baseball, not at the major league level. But if you look at it, the numbers he put up, it's pretty extraordinary. And there just isn't a place for him with the Dodgers, right? They've got a first baseman. They've got a DH because they signed the most expensive contract in baseball. And the Cubs swoop in and get a guy that is a perfect fit for what they need. They needed a power first baseman. They got it. And the guy has been great. Five straight games with a home run. I mean, if that doesn't speak to consistency, then what does? Can he keep it up? His swing looks consistent enough for it to keep up. I'm sure, like every player, there are going to be some ups and downs. But I like the rapport he's got with the manager. I like the way they look at him as a player. And I think that he's establishing himself as we speak right now.
I'm not going to take any questions.
What did you make of Nick Nastrini's first MLB start for the White Sox? How do you like Jonathan Cannon starting on Tuesday? That's today. Is Chris Flexen moving out of that White Sox starting rotation?
Yeah, I believe Chris Flexen, we heard for the first time. I mean, and I don't think anyone knows Chris Flexen nor cares as to whether or not he's going to remain in the starting lineup. But I read that Nick Nastrini coming up last night is the youngest player on the team at age 24. Really? Well, until tonight, because Jonathan Cannon is 23. So, you know, at least they're going to have some youngish pitchers. There does seem to be, you know, Nastrini would have been their fifth starter out of spring training, but he got ill. And then he went to Charlotte for a couple of games, had a really rough outing, had two bad outings, frankly, in Charlotte. But one, he just didn't look the part. The second one, Charlotte is like this bandbox little stadium, and you give up home runs. And I think he had like a 7.7 ERA when they brought him up to start. And they trusted what they saw in spring training. They felt that he and Garrett Crochet were the best of their rotation. So that's... Yeah, I thought he did great last night. I love seeing his family there. I think that's always cool when you are nasty and your family's in the stands. So good for him. You know, again, you get no run support because it's a White Sox, so that's kind of a drag. But it'll be fun to see Jonathan Cannon, too. They just got to start making some moves so you feel like they have a future. Right now, they got a bunch of kind of middle-aged baseball players going nowhere. This is one of the worst teams ever assembled. I don't know what the thought process was behind it.
So Nick Nastrini, a rookie. Jonathan Cannon, a rookie. Nastrini looked good until he didn't, right? He probably got left in one rotation too long, but that's okay. Like these guys need to develop. They're not going for rookie of the year. Jonathan Cannon, sure, it's a reason to, you know, it's a reason to tune in. If you're looking for a reason to watch the White Sox, You want to see if they can develop, right? Another big thing around the White Sox. Can they develop anybody? Can Chris Getz develop people that other people drafted? A topic that we'll get into later. So those are reasons. Chris Flexen, okay, so if he's not in the rotation, does he go to the bullpen? Probably.
That's what they say.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not exactly waiting with bated breath either to find out. I mean, I think that when you talk about whether the Sox go to a five-man rotation or six-man rotation, there's not exactly the most riveting debate because I love Nastrini. Go to six. Get them all experience. Get as much experience. Bring up Drew Thorpe. I'm ready. Drew Thorpe would be great. What do the Sox have to lose? They're 2-14. They could win 10 in a row.
Yeah. Can they hit?
Exactly. 10 in a row and still be below 500 by two games. This is the worst. We'll get to the offense in a moment, but this is the worst start in franchise history. If they go five-man rotation, if they go four-man rotation, if they go seven-man rotation. I found it amusing watching last night, as little that I did. Michael Kopech was warming up, and they had a discussion, Steve and John Schriffen, about Steve Stone and John Schriffen, about Michael Kopech's role. And he was referred to as the potential closer. And Steve made a good comment about how you kind of need a lead before you have to close anything. Get a lead. Who's pitching is kind of immaterial because they can't score a run. But I was happy for Nick Destrini. He did handle things post-game. I liked hearing him talk about his family being there. And the Sox need to climb out of this hole. And I guess the best way to do that would be with young pitching. So I'm ready to see the other young guys. Thorpe, Cannon, Destrini. Let's see them.
You know, that's a question. That question is for each individual fan.
With Eloy Jimenez activated off the injured list and Moncada and Luis Robert Jr. both getting positive injury updates from Chris Getz over the weekend, will those three guys be back on the field together before this season is over? Do positive updates on long-term injuries do a thing for you?
Well, they only tell me when the Sox will be in a position to potentially have serious trade conversations with any of the three, because you're not going to be able to trade an injured player. And whether or not you trade Luis Robert or not, that's going to be a season-long debate. You might want to keep somebody that at least gives you some semblance of a major league lineup. But Eloy Jimenez, Yoan Moncada, they need to get healthy enough to be dealt. I don't know if that's realistic or not. I don't have any confidence that all three will be together on the same field. Without them, though, this is a minor league lineup. This is one of the worst major leagues lineups in recent memory and history. This is the only team since the 1907 team from Brooklyn, the Super Baz, is that what they are?
I was trying to figure out how to pronounce that.
I don't know
name.
Either. Super Bad, but yeah. I don't know about Super Baz. But since 1907, that they have been shut out six times in the first 16 games.
Was McLovin on that team?
I don't know. Can we get Bruce on? Because he was probably covering that team.
He covered it.
Yeah.
Here's what I don't get. You activated Eloy, and then you didn't use him until the bottom of the ninth.
Don't get that.
Is he ready to play or not? Because if he's ready to play, I don't care about the metrics and the this and the that and the Gavin Sheets this and that. Get him in the game. Like, you know, to your point about trading him, he's got to show that he can stay healthy. He's got to show that he can hit. He doesn't have the luxury of being, I only face X kind of pitchers. Okay, get him out there or wait till today. If you're going to use him, use him. I mean, sure, I hope for White Sox fans' sake that those three guys get back on the field together, but I don't see it happening. I don't see why Yoan Moncada would come back this year. I don't see anything positive for him by coming back.
Look, it's nice to get updates on guys. It's nice to hear the general manager tell you that, Luis Robert is going to be closer to 6 weeks than 8 weeks. And, you know, the 3 to 6 months on Moncada, well, you know, it'll be closer to the 3 months. I mean, are you kidding me? That means nothing to me. That does nothing for me. I can't imagine them all being back. I can't imagine seeing Moncada again. Listen, they miss him, okay? Because the one thing that they were going to do, they were going to be able to play defense this year. You remember that? They were going to be stronger up the middle. They were going to play better defense. Well, that's part of the real problem with this team. They don't do anything well. They're kicking the ball around, and they don't have any kind of decent hitting to even speak of. We knew they weren't going to hit. We knew they got a bunch of slappy hitters in here and it wasn't going to work, but we thought that they were going to win different and they were going to look better and they were going to be fundamentally fast and all that nonsense. None of it is true. They're real slow in what they do. They're real bad at what they do. They can't do anything well. They miss Yoan Moncada's defense at third base. Boy, do they miss Luis Robert. I don't want to be too mean to Dominic Fletcher because I know I'm used to watching a 6'2 guy take like four steps and catch everything, and now I'm seeing a 5'7 guy take like 15 steps and knock a ball over the top of the wall. So I got to calm down with that. But that's the worst part of it. They don't do anything well. I thought they were giving up offense for defense. They gave up offense for nothing. They're awful.
It's a good question.
All right. Do you believe the Bears can make a surprise move in the upcoming NFL draft? If they did, what would it consist of? A trade up, a trade down, using a pick on anyone other than a wide receiver, offensive tackle, or edge with their second first round pick?
Yeah, I don't know what a real surprise looks like. I get it. There seems to be a lot of increased chatter about the Bears needing more, got to get more. If that's the case, then they shouldn't have made all those trades. If they feel now like they gave away too much and they're going to ruin their first two picks, then they blew it. They blew it before the thing starts. I've said this to you before. Is it asking so much to take advantage, to take the gimme? Take the best quarterback in the draft. Take the best player on the board, number 9. If it's a receiver, then grab that player. If it's as good a play, if it's somehow Malik Nabers falls, if somehow it's Roma Dunze, take that guy and run like a thief in the night. Take the freebie. The idea of now trying to trade down and you know, honestly, the only real surprise would be if they traded up, if they gave up a second round pick next year and somehow managed to move up and get Marvin Harrison Jr., which has been mentioned in different places. It's kind of an insane thought. But if something like that happened, it would be a surprise. Or if they were to sort of just take what is welcome and available to them and just try to hold their water a little bit. That would now be a little bit of a shock at this point, because it seems increasingly as if they've decided they've got to trade down.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of trading down at all. Not even a little tiny bit. I don't get the players, get them now, get the guys that can dominate on Sundays or Thursdays or Saturdays or even Fridays now in the NFL, or Wednesdays. They're going to play 3 games on Christmas. It's a Wednesday this year. Anyway, the craziest thing would be something that Mully just mentioned. Two parts. And it goes back to Maserati Marv, okay? Trading up to go get Maserati Marv at either 4th or 5th, or something I saw yesterday out there in the Twitter world, that there's a rumor floating around that part of the reason Marvin Harrison has been so coy during this whole process is that he wants teams to pass on him to somehow get down to 9 and be a Chicago Bear. Look at Mully on Twitch and David biting his lip on Twitch. So that's out there, that he is acting this way. And if Brad Biggs' mock 3.0 is right, he's got 2 wide receivers sitting there at 3. David, I mean, you got to be watching Twitch. If you're not watching Twitch, you're making a mistake, okay? Watch us on Twitch.
We'll talk to Biggsy about 3.0.
Okay? Other part.
We're going to talk to Biggsy.
When we talk to Biggsy, Biggsy trades down and he has the Bears drafting what most are saying is the 3rd or 4th best offensive tackle. If you're going to trade down and you're going to go O-line, in my opinion, you should then take the best center on the board, and that is Jackson Powers Johnson, who could play this position for a decade.
At 9?
That's way too high.
Not at 9.
Where?
If you're trading down, I said, if you're following Brad's...
Okay, so at 12?
Sure.
Oh, boy.
Not the 3rd tackle. Time's or the up. 4th tackle.
Center at 12 is ridiculous. I think when you look at the way that they could shock the world is if they move up to 4 or 5 for Marvin Harrison Jr. And I think that's not as absurd as it sounds if you have quarterbacks off the board and you're willing to give up your number one in 2025. It's a tall order. It's a high price. It also might be the boldest thing you could do. It might be the best thing you could do. If he's still on the board, it's going to be tempting to ignore, or it's going to be tempting and it's going to be hard to ignore. That's how you shock the world at the NFL draft, or shock them in the other way. If they're sitting there at 9, everyone's thinking edge rusher, everyone's thinking wide receiver, and they take a defensive tackle. But I don't think that's smart either. unfortunately, I think the Bears shock the world by either moving up and being bold and aggressive and some would say reckless by giving up draft capital in the future, which I would probably be okay with, or picking a player that maybe you don't expect them to take. Trading down would be super safe, super boring, and I think not the best thing that they could do. It wouldn't necessarily be a surprise, though. So the most surprising thing the Bears could do would be the way they could help themselves with Maserati Marv.
It's a good question.
What did you think of the Sky's draft of Camila Cardoso and Angel Reese, and how much will it affect your interest in this team? Do you think you'll watch more Sky games this season, which starts next month, or Indiana Fever games with the great Caitlin Clark?
Well, I think it's hard to know how many games you'll go to, but I'm more likely to go to a game now because of what happened last night. Caitlin Clark will be on national television, 36 of the 40 Fever games. So you might bump into more of her telecast or more of her action. That will be something I'll watch. I don't really know the answer to that, whether I watch more Sky games or Fever games. It'll probably be very close. But what happened on Monday night was that the Sky took a step back into Chicago sports relevance. And maybe they're taking advantage of the void that exists because there's not a whole lot of relevance to talk about. But I think the Sky in drafting the two young ladies, Camila Cardoso and Angel Reese, made them a lot more interesting, a lot more compelling, and a lot more competitive. And those are things you need. So, yes, this was a great draft for the Chicago Sky. You could say the Sky won the draft by getting two players who were rivals in college and now teammates as professionals. And this is going to be a lot of fun to see unfold, and hopefully it will spark a little bit more of interest, renewed interest in the franchise.
So I watched the WNBA pre-draft. I watched the WNBA draft ahead of watching the White Sox game last night. I don't know how anybody's going to get a rebound against the Sky. Seriously. I mean, there will be no second chance opportunities for another team. If you want to teach your young ladies how to box out and get boards, I mean, watch the Sky. Also, programming note, on Sunday, the 23rd day of June, the Fever will be at the Sky. So over at Wintrust Arena. So that is mark your calendars. And I bet after that draft last night, I think yesterday I saw before the draft, the cheapest ticket for that game was a little over $100 a seat. I bet it's close to $100.50 or $200 now after what the Sky did in that draft. So pretty exciting. Good coverage by the Four Letter Network of that draft last night. And I think, yes, I think there'll be a lot more eyes and ears on the WNBA this summer.
Yeah, I can't commit to how many games I'm going to go to or if I'll spend a lot of time watching Caitlin Clark on television. I'll tell you this. The next thing on my kind of radar with the WNBA, with women's basketball, is the Olympics. And you know, Caitlin Clark, they had their tryout camp while she was in the Final Four. And they're going to take, 12, 14 players to Paris, and it's believed she'll be one of them. And it was wild. Like, I heard her say, and I haven't heard her talk about this a lot, but she said something along the lines of someone told her that all the people who love you and all the – you're going to get an equal amount of people that don't like you, and they're going to get as much grief – as you received. And it seemed almost as if she's preparing for that, because if she's the only collegiate player that's on the Olympic team and it's a dream of hers, and how do you not put her on the Olympic team if you want to draw some viewers, right? If you're a TV network, don't you call USA Basketball and insist on it? So, but that would mean presumably that there's going to be somebody cut from that team that people are not going to be happy about. I don't know, but I am
she's also good enough.
Monitoring and concerned about how well she's accepted and how. And I would repeat yet again, everyone should be aware that she's bringing in tons of eyeballs and tons of fans. And if you really want to grow your league, you take care of her.
She's also good enough to make the Olympic team.
I didn't say she wasn't. Yeah, I was just saying that she didn't have the tryout team.
It would be more than just a TV move, though.
But it should be just for a TV move. if nothing else.
Well, NBC recognizes her marketability. If not, she would not have been on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, boy. She was great on Saturday Night Live.
That was funny.
She was very funny. And congratulations to Michael Che, who kind of allowed her to be funny and took one for the team.
At his expense.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
It was good stuff. All right, we've got the extra point next. Mully and Haw on the score.
Maserati Mar.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Penn State's Chop Robinson became the latest edge rusher with a first-round potential to visit the Bears touring Hallis Hall on Monday. Do you think that suggests Ryan Poles more strongly considering trading down from 9 and still take a pass rusher he knows well? Or is he thinking hard about taking one at number 9 if he's the first defensive player off the board?
I don't think he's suggesting anything. I don't think he's tipping his hand. Maybe he's going the other way because he wants people to believe he's infatuated with one of the pass rushers. They could go defensive tackle. They could go still edge rusher if the draft falls a certain way. If the first four quarterbacks are gone, if the top three receivers are gone, and an offensive tackle is off the board, boom, you're at 9. Then what do? I think Dustin would trade back to get a center, which I did not mean to dismiss Dustin, but I don't think I would draft a center that high. If you are at 9 and the quarterbacks and receivers and the offensive tackle off the board, the Bears still would be in an enviable spot because they would be getting the number one offensive player in the draft, if you believe that's Caleb Williams, and the number one defensive player in the draft, which would be the pass rusher they choose. I don't think it will be Chop Robinson. I think 9 would be high for him. His college production didn't match or warrant that kind of draft status or draft positioning. They could get the other guys who are on, you know, Dallas Turner versus whatever, they're pick your favorite one. But whoever that is, that could give the Bears the top defensive player in the draft. I like Latu, but not at 9 because of the medicals. But I think it will all be a moot point. Ryan Poles may want us to believe this, but I still think they're leaning offense.
Dustin wants the Bears to stay at 9. Dustin wants them to take the best player available at 9. Dustin prefers the Bears to take a wide receiver at 9 is what Dustin prefers.
I love it when you go third person.
Yeah, do you? Because I found that annoying. yeah. Look, I want them to take the multiplier, whomever that may be. And I want them to do a good enough job in evaluating the draft, not to feel like whatever moves they've made to this point is forcing them to trade down. So Chop Robinson, great to see him come in. Chop Robinson's a mid to later round first round draft pick. He may get moved up because he is an edge rusher and there's only 4 of them in the first round. But I don't know that I would be in a rush to get him unless there was a trade down, and I mean beyond 12. So I noticed they also brought in a couple of safeties and a corner or two. So they're looking at the secondary, which makes me wonder how they're going to get that done. Depending on, I'm talking about top 30 visits. I'm just curious as to how they're going to get that done unless they trade down. So who knows what it means. I feel, and I've said this all along, I feel like we've been tearing up sheets and boiling water and doing everything we can to get ready for this draft. We're going to pull this thing through. And I just want them to take what's given to them. Take the quarterback. That's the right guy. And then get the best player on the board at 9, especially if it's like a Roma Dunze or a Joe Alt or whomever that may be, the best player at 9. I don't want them getting on their horse and trying to gather more picks because they want to get into the fourth or fifth round. I want them to get the best 2 players they can get and have them be multipliers and improve their
Don't team. Overthink it.
That's my only wish for them. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how that plays out. We got John Heyman joining us next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
John Heyman, insider for MLB Network.
Chicago is watching carefully, no question about it.
New York Post columnist, curb your enthusiasm enthusiast.
You hate people.
Well, I hate people individually, but I love mankind.
John Heyman with Mully and Haw.
I like the White Sox. You never know with the Cubs.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our guy, John Heyman, New York Post, MLB Network, Odyssey, and he joins us on the Score Hotline. John, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right.
Well, we're having a blast. Are you kidding me? This has been quite the season. The Cubs with another big win. That's what I meant. Yeah. Big late night win for the Cubs. They are doing a good job on the road, winning at night. People love it. And it's been fun to watch, especially having a guy like Michael Busch hitting a home run in five consecutive games. Did we know he was this good?
I didn't know. I got to give the Cubs credit for giving him the job. You've got guys like Brandon Belt out there. There are a lot of first basemen still available, and they went out and made the trade for Busch, who was really good in the minor leagues. Obviously, the Dodgers do not have room. They got a pretty good first baseman in Freeman, a pretty good DH in Ohtani. So they capitalized and give the Cubs credit. A terrific job by them to acquire him.
So, John, nationally, I wonder how long it will take before people start to look at the White Sox only for the reason that, to put it in some historical context, is this the worst team ever? Because in Chicago, they're already off to the worst start in franchise history. You look at the lineup, and I'm wondering if the Iowa Cubs are better. Where is this headed, and how do they get out of the rut?
Well, you know, they're rebuilding, as we've said. The worst team ever takes some doing. I mean, the 62 Mets, that's tough to beat. Even the 03 Tigers didn't get there. They looked like they were going to, and they were way worse than this White Sox team. I mean, there are a couple nice things about this team. I mean, you have to look carefully, but historically, I wouldn't say their history. I would say they're going to give Oakland and Colorado a run for their money for the worst team of this year, but I don't think they're going to make history this year. I really don't.
If Tommy Pham signs, can he prevent shutouts?
I think he's a good hitter. I mean, he had an OPS plus of like a 111 last year. He's been third in the NLCS. He's been fifth in the World Series. I mean, this is going to be quite the bargain. So, yeah, he's not going to turn them into a world beater, but he is a good hitter. So it will be a plus, yes.
Back to the Cubs, John. You look at Kyle Hendricks pitching tonight, and it suddenly it becomes a pretty big start for him.
Yeah.
You look at the other pitchers in the rotation, Assad, Ben Brown has been pretty good since he came up after a first shaky debut, gave up one hit last night to the Diamondbacks in six innings. So how big of a start is this with Kyle Hendricks, and how long do you think the Cubs will wait before, if he continues to struggle, doing something about it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously got T-Ron waiting in the wings. They got some potential guys. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, the start that Hendricks is off to, I would say that, you know, every start is a big start. I don't know if he's just one start that he needs to do something. They may give him a little more rope than that based on his history as a very good pitcher for the team. But, yeah, you're right. It's big for him to stay in the rotation long term to turn it around. Pretty quickly. I don't know that have to be this start, but fairly quickly, I would agree.
As far as the run troubles of the White Sox, I thought it was amazing that that Pedro Grifols said that where we get in trouble is if there's a leadoff triple and you're thinking we're going to lose this game if that guy scores. He said that on Sunday, I believe, and he said that, you know, you give up – normally you give up a run, it's 1-0, you're still in the game. But that apparently isn't the case with this year's team because they can't score a damn run.
Well, I appreciate his honesty. It's rare that you see somebody that honest about it. I think their offense is better than they've shown so far. I don't think Benintendi is a 180 hitter. I think he's got to be better than that, right? They paid a record contract, at least a team record contract for him. So I wouldn't say that was a good signing, but I would say that he should be a major league type hitter. And I do think Grossman is a decent hitter. I thought that was a good signing. You know, I mean, it's not going to be a good offensive team. They went for defense, and they're rebuilding. So it's going to be a low-scoring team. But, you know, I think one run is probably an exaggeration. But, again, I appreciate his honesty. I don't know that too many managers would be this honest, but I think he's not that far from the truth.
The conversation locally will continue to surround this possibility, idea. Maybe it's just a wish. But what? How realistic is it to think that Jerry Reinsdorf will sell the White Sox and that will happen sooner rather than later?
I mean, well, you've heard the rumors, right? So, I mean, you can't disregard him entirely. He seems to be, fighting for the state new stadium location. So, it does seem like he's, thinking about the team and what to do next for the team. So I don't know if that's an indication that he won't be selling, but he's certainly still thinking about it. I mean, I guess it depends on his offspring, his sons, how interested they are. You always hear they're much more interested in basketball than they are in baseball. So I would say that there's probably a decent chance that the team would change hands. I mean, we've heard the rumors for a decade at this point. So I would say that it would certainly – I wouldn't rule it out. I would certainly think it is a possibility.
John, Julia Teheran and the Cubs have signed him. Is that sort of a nod to the idea that not only – they have guys coming up, but Justin Steele won't be back anytime soon. And meanwhile, Tyon is coming back. But you look at what's going on with the professor, as we talked about earlier. Is that just an insurance policy? Just get him in a minor league deal. The guy has been a professional pitcher and clearly someone the council knows.
Right. I mean, he was really good for Milwaukee last year. So that's only a year ago. He's not that old. Obviously, he threw a lot of innings early for the Braves. So he may not last as long as some others. But, I mean, he's pretty young. He was pretty good last year. You can never have too much pitching. Sorry for the cliche. I mean, I think it's a good signing. I'm sure there are many, many teams that were looking at him. And, he sees an opportunity here. So I would think that it's just not just insurance. I think they're probably expecting him to make some starts for this team. They have enough questions, as you mentioned, between Steele, Tyone, Hendricks, that he probably will make starts. And he was pretty good very good last year for Milwaukee. And exactly, Council knows him. So, I think that's a good signing, a smart thing to do. And I'm surprised he didn't go to one of the more desperate teams like Houston. They've got like a whole rotation worth of guys on the injured list right now. But maybe he wants to be on a team that looks like a contender too. So probably smart for him to do this.
John, we love our announcers and broadcasters in Chicago, and certainly we respect when one steps away elsewhere. John Sterling, 85 years old. Retired yesterday, a little abruptly, suddenly. I'm sure in New York, as being around the Yankees as long as you have a relationship with him. How big of a loss will that be? And what kind of relationship did you have with a voice that is definitely recognizable to baseball fans everywhere?
Yeah, very nice guy. Always had a kind word. I thought he was a great announcer. Obviously, he was getting up there, and it was pointed out in the media that he was getting up there. And, it was a little surprising how abrupt it came because, I mean, he's still, unlike me, he's got, like you guys, he has a great voice. And I thought he could continue to do it. I've listened to a few games this year on the radio, and I thought he was still pretty good. But, it's definitely a loss for New York, for the Yankees. The home run calls are legendary. He's a legend. And, yeah, I did know him very, very well. I did a spot with him for probably 10 years, 1990 to 2000, something like that. And just a terrific gentleman who's really a cultured figure. And, I think New York will miss him.
Yeah, you always worry when you see kind of an abrupt retirement that there could be a medical connection, so you worry about that. But 85 years old, good God, I mean, what a run.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's anything specific, at least not that I've heard. I just think he's getting up there and he realized it, and they gave him the option to cut back or to retire, and he surprisingly took retirement. So he must realize it himself. 85 is not young, and that is, of course, the admitted age. We don't know the actual age because as we know, John Sterling is not his real name. He's got a stage name. John Heyman is my name. But, you know, 85 is what he admits to. And he can get away with it because he's got a full head of hair and he looks great for somebody who is 85 or whatever he is.
You're a journalist, John. You have to deal with the truth and facts and accuracy.
Have you well, seen his birth certificate from the Dominican?
No, I mean, nobody's looking, so you can say whatever you want. I mean, he's, you know, I'm a little skeptical. That's all. Like, I was skeptical that George Steinbrenner was born July 4th. I have not seen the birth certificate on that either.
So. Back to baseball for a moment, John. When you look around the league, we talk about the White Sox because they're right in our city and they stink. But is there a more disappointing team? Let's see. Is it Astros? Is it the Marlins? Early on, mid-April, who's the most disappointing team in baseball?
I guess it would say the Astros, based on the fact they've been in the ALCS 6-7 years right. in a row, and is it 7 or 8? I don't know. And they've got a losing record, but they have so many injuries. As I said, full rotation basically on the IL at this point, so. I'm sure their fans are quite upset. I was there for the first 4 games, all losses to the Yankees. I'm sure they will turn it around. Are they going to get in the playoffs? You know, I'm still betting on them to get in the playoffs. So it's way early at this point. But to this point, with that record, with that talent, with that history, that's probably the most disappointing team. I mean, we weren't expecting much from the Marlins, really. I mean, I know they got in on a fluke and an incredible managing job last year, but so many injuries, I mean, couldn't expect too much. And the White Sox, I mean, we knew they would be right. bad. We didn't know they'd be this bad, but we knew they'd be very bad.
Yeah, we knew that. I thought the Twins would be better, John. I've been a little surprised that that they're barely above the White Sox in the AL Central. I thought they would be running away from it, but the Guardians and the Royals are well ahead of them, and so are, for that matter, the Tigers.
Right. Guardians, Royals, Pirates, shockingly good. Mm-hmm. I would say there's more pleasant surprises than there are really shocking disappointments. I do still think the Twins are going to be good. Obviously, Royce Lewis. I mean, they've had so many injuries to their top three players, right? And Buxton, I think, is the healthy one right now. Correa and Lewis are out. But those three guys who are picked – two of them picked number one in the draft overall, and one of them picked number two in the draft overall. They've had the injury bug. Correa has been the best of the three, staying on the field, obviously, but so many injuries for Lewis is so unfortunate. And Buxton, I still think the Twins are going to win that division. Again, we've played 10% of the season, so while we can draw some conclusions about the White Sox, I'm not going to draw any conclusions about the Twins and some of these other teams.
This segment with John Heyman is brought to you by Grainger, official partner of the Chicago Cubs in Wrigley Field. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Thank you, John. Always a joy.
Thanks, John.
Oh, all right. Great talking to you guys. See you later.
That's our guy, John Heyman. Always fun to talk to John.
Yeah, nice for him to get up early and give us our baseball wisdom.
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out, is John Sterling 90? I mean, what is our conclusion out of that one?
Well, I think he's suggesting that he's not 85, right. If he's saying that's his alleged 88? Age. He does look good. He does sound
Is he Jerry's age?
Jerry's 88, correct?
87? Going to be 88?
Jerry's 87.
Is he 88?
Let's see, the Iraqi billionaire is 86.
Oh, boy. We should have asked about that. We still have to get to the bottom of that one. We've got our guy, Big Z, is going to join us next. We'll talk to Brad Biggs. We'll find out what the Bears are going to do, not with the number one overall pick, but with their own pick, the number 9 pick. Are they moving down? Big Z has an answer. Mullion Haw on the score.